You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Show Recaps Theater presents The Many Saints of Newark Review, featuring your hosts Grace Leader and Ariel Gomez, special guests Rob Sesternino and Nicole Sesternino. We hope you enjoy the show.
All right, we got our popcorn, we got our soda, we're in our seats, we're back, post-show recaps, theater, at the movies, very special coverage. We're talking about The Many Saints of Newark. I'm Grace, and I'm here with my co-host, Ariel. How you doing, Ariel?
I'm fantastic. I'm so excited to be here. It's a big episode for a lot of reasons. It's our first solo episode. I'm really excited to test the waters in that sense and see how it goes. And we have some very exciting guests. I'm so happy to have both Rob Sesternino and Nicole Sesternino here. I wish I had a bell to introduce them.
Rob's got
yeah!
it.
Yeah!
Bada ding!
As soon as I saw that this movie was coming out and then I heard Nicole, you talking on the Patreon 5 for 5 about you're like have never been more excited to talk about a movie, I was like, Ariel, we have to get Nicole on the podcast to talk about it.
I don't know if she will.
Yeah. But since hearing your take on this movie, I was, you know, I'm a little bit more nervous, but I am excited to hear your thoughts about The Many Saints of Newark, The Sopranos prequel movie released on HBO Max and in theaters. So up front, we typically do spoiler free section and we're going to do stream it, see it or skip it. Rob or Nicole, why don't you go first? What were your thoughts on the movie?
Well, let me just set up that. You know, I am a, you know, Sopranos fan, but yeah. My wife is the biggest Sopranos super fan.
I don't know if I would go that far.
I know.
I don't
that I know.
The actors that much.
That of all that the people that I know, nobody has rewatched Sopranos, listens to Sopranos podcast, does Sopranos. Maybe we can get Nicole to do some Sopranos sporkle quizzes.
Oh, I would
ace
them.
Okay. You name so all
would,
the cast.
Yeah, maybe let's do that. Member. Let's set that up on Twitch sometime where Nicole does Sopranos sporkle quizzes. But this was an event at our house.
It really was. I was counting down the days for this to come out, and my father ruined it. My father had
what?
To visit the weekend that this came out. And I can't watch this stuff in front of him because he ruins it for me.
Yeah, there's definitely stuff that I can't watch in front of my parents. I think The Sopranos mm-hmm. definitely fits in that category.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a huge Sopranos fan. Yeah. I was actually surprised, Rob, that I was listening to Renap and you said actually, I was surprised that you weren't as big of a Sopranos fan. I think I
so
just
I
lumped your fandom together.
Real time like in the first couple of seasons, and this is where my wife and I will disagree, that I think that Sopranos is probably the most important show of all time, and I think that the first three seasons of the show are as good as anything that's ever been made, but I think that they kind of like lost a few miles per hour on the fastball towards the end of the run and really were sort of like phoning it in by the end of The Sopranos.
They were not phoning it in. It certainly wasn't as like amazing. Like the first few seasons were like, truly amazing.
Like I think Sopranos probably went on like probably about like 20, 30 episodes too long.
If you ask me.
It's only 86 episodes.
So you mean that entire 20 million episode final season that they split into two is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. And it's like name one thing that happened in the final 2 years.
I can
of
name 75 things that happened.
Yeah, but can the average person like name like any plot point from like the final like 3 years of The Sopranos?
I bet they can.
Grace or Ariel, can either of you name a
Yeah, I remember what happened in the finale.
The finale.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I do remember.
Like, does anybody remember like the plot of the final season of The Sopranos or anything like that?
Yeah, they went to a cabin, and Tony and Bacala got into a fight. Bacala.
Over Monopoly, sure.
Soprano family movies.
Yeah. So I don't have the same reverence.
Like, that's like TV nowadays. I watched it for the first time as like a binge watch of like watching it all. And I've only ever watched through it once. And so I do feel like a lot of the show blends. But like, I feel like this is how we watch TV now. Everything blends together.
I think you need to go back and watch it again. Because after you see the whole thing in its entirety and you go back and watch it, like things make more sense.
Yes.
I mean, I think there's a good time to say, and then we'll get back to our takes. I'm a filthy, filthy Sopranos casual. Like I have seen.
That's adorable.
I would say a lot of the Sopranos. A quick backstory. When I was in, I have a friend who I've known since the first grade, and like for the longest time, they never had cable. And then finally I got cable, and basically I was recording things on HBO for my friend's mom, like The Wire, The Sopranos, 6 Feet Under, things that I grew to love. But The Sopranos was one that like it was hard for me to go back into because I had already seen stuff. Sometimes I would leave the recordings on and then like come back to it later. It was like kind of a mess. So I know a lot of the plot points, but I don't know like every single beat. But all to say that for whatever reason, seeing this movie made me want to, even though I never really wanted to see the series again, this movie made me want to watch the series again and made me appreciate like what I could, like the experience that I could have if I were to watch it in its entirety. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to talk about that.
Rob, you said it's up there with some of the best TV. Nicole, do you think it's the best TV show of all time?
Yeah, I definitely do. I don't really get hooked on shows, and this is one that got me.
Yeah. And I make the distinction that I think it's the most important show of all time, because I feel like that without Sopranos, I think that does, you know, the next like 20 years of prestige drama doesn't happen or unfold in the same way without
Absolutely.
What happens, you know, when The Sopranos comes on in 1999.
Yeah. I don't know if you call it Tony Soprano like an anti-hero. But certainly like that. Archetype.
I think yes, he definitely he was.
For sure. And to that point, like all the ones that came after were popular and were kind of like the ground was broken by Tony Soprano in this show. I think that's accurate for sure.
Tony Soprano was the first main character that was like the good guy to actually murder somebody on screen.
Well, yeah.
I mean,
and people still liked him.
Yeah, it was 1999. It's crazy to think because it doesn't feel, you know, it feels like such a 2000s show. And obviously that was just the first season. So the majority of it is in the 2000s. But it's crazy when I went back on IMDb and looked, I was like, wow, it really was 1999. That's kind of insane.
Yeah. I mean, so then
a long time ago.
It makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I guess sort of it makes sense. You know, this is the age of, you know, we reboot, we do prequels, we do sequels, but why a movie? I feel like the show, I mean, I know people have like trouble with the ending, but this is a prequel. So it's not like we're picking up from where they left off, but like the urge to like dive back into this universe. I mean, you were excited, Nicole, right? For them to explore this world again, right?
Yeah, because David Chase was really, really adamant about not making a Sopranos movie. He did not want to do it. He did not want to explore the ending. He was very much against it. And then when he decided to do this movie, like this was a big deal.
But David Chase hates the fans of The Sopranos.
David Chase is insulting to us. I am not a fan of David Chase at all.
Yeah.
I can go on you can get a Nicole rant here if you want one.
We'll take it.
I do think it's fascinating, but Nicole, yes, I would love to hear this.
Yeah, David Chase hates hates the people. He hates the fans. Every actor that has worked on the show, they like sing David Chase's praises of how amazing, how brilliant
they
he
have
is.
To.
But he treats us like dirt. He has interviews about the show, and will add, like, he'll be asked, like, what is this about? And he'll be like, oh, it's about nothing. That's nothing. That meant nothing. Like, what do you mean that means nothing? There's nothing that means nothing, especially in The Sopranos. Like, every line means something. Everything is significant. And then at the end of The Sopranos, when the screen went black, he was like, oh, that meant nothing. Oh, you guys have bigger things to worry about in the world than what happened on The Sopranos. Like, we invested our years of our lives into this show, and you're telling us that it means nothing?
Honestly, like, are we spoiling the end of The Sopranos? Like,
I mean, I think
not
we
the
have.
Movie, not the, yeah,
I think
okay.
we have.
So, but
yeah.
so like that, the ending to, yeah. of The Sopranos was like the biggest FU to
it
the
really
audience
was.
Of The Sopranos. It's almost like that David Chase was like, you know, that like it's almost like that. Oh, you like these characters? Well, you're not supposed to. I hate them.
Mm-hmm. You're stupid for hating them.
If you like
people.
These, yeah. If you like these people, then you know, I hate you also.
Well, you know what? I like these people, and I hate you, David Chase.
We'll get into it. I feel like there's some you know, similarities between how the show ended and how this movie went. But
is that the podcast's official stance on David Chase that we hate him?
yeah.
it is for this episode.
No, he's coming on next week. I'll cancel.
Oh God.
Yeah, I'll cancel the booking.
I won't be here. yeah, I do think it's really fascinating to just consider like the history of him with the fans and like how he, and obviously, you know, it's other people have written about this at length and it's been covered at length, but like he originally wanted the pilot to be a movie because he didn't want to continue. Like he wanted to be one and done kind of thing. Then it turned into a show and he kind of like resented it because it wasn't.
Yeah, and he also hates television.
Right. He looks down on television, just like he looks down on fans. Like I love this idea of he thinks he's making, or not thinks, I mean, it is, right? It's art that he made, especially the series. Mm-hmm. But he looks down on the medium that he put it out on and the people that enjoy it. Like I think there's something so, I don't know, like you think of like famous composers or like old people that we will never know, like Mozart, and you think like, is this what these people were like? Like they hate it. Everything they do is trash and all the people who like it is trash and no one knows any better.
So pretentious.
I think it's exactly.
Especially like an elitist. Shut up. Mm-hmm.
But arguably, could we have gotten the same quality show had he not been such an elitist? I think that's interesting.
He doesn't have to be a jerk.
That's fair.
The key to making good art is to be a jerk. Rob, if you could just start implementing that into your practice. Yeah.
So, and again, I don't know necessarily like how much he is involved in like, and Nicole maybe can speak to this more, like how much is David Chase involved in every sort of like little detail and how much like did his like creative team of directors and writers and how much they had input on, you know, the things that really were, you know, popular and successful about The Sopranos.
Oh, David Chase had the final say on everything. Mm-hmm. Every script that was written, even if it wasn't written by him, it had to be finalized by him. He had to go through every line by line, and the actors were not allowed to improv. They had to go exactly from the script. Mm-hmm. So he was like a complete...
He's a mob boss. He's
stickler.
Control
freak.
Yeah, control freak. Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense. Like Matthew Weiner, who went on to create the show Mad Men, which is my personal favorite. He ran it basically the same, and it makes sense that he would have learned that from Sopranos when he was a writer on that. So, Grace, did you like this movie? I feel like we haven't heard.
I kind of had low expectations about this movie, and then I went into it and I think they exceeded my low expectations, and there are still many, many problems I have with this movie.
Expectations going into this movie. And I went in the opposite with extremely high expectations.
Yeah.
Which is fair, being such a big fan.
Yeah.
You know, it's diving back into this world, especially when he said he didn't, you know, he wasn't really interested.
And the trailer was
world
so
again.
Good.
And it's a really great cast for this
incredible.
Movie. So there was like reasons to be excited about it, certainly. And I would say people, especially if you were a Sopranos fan, I still think it's worth seeing. But I think you have to have low expectations. I would still say see it. But don't go to the movie theaters to see it. Maybe just like wait for it's streaming.
Well, it's streaming on HBO Max, I believe, through the end of October. I don't know what happens after October. Like then you they take it off HBO
Max. It's on to Halloween. Yeah. Well, what happens is they made that deal with like all the HBO movies that that were going to come out on HBO Max. It was only going to be for the initial 30-day window, and then they were going to go back to theater exclusive, like movie theater exclusive, which was how they kind of tried to pacify the movie theater companies when all this first happened. But then eventually it will be back on HBO Max. I can't remember what the
date is. Isn't that so dumb? Like, why don't they make it like, okay, it's in theaters and then after 30 days, then it'll be on HBO Max and then it'll stay on HBO Max. It's so stupid. If it's like, because it's on HBO Max, then we're taking it off.
Because capitalism, I don't know.
And then we're going to put it back.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is
like, watch it soon or later, but not in the middle.
Yeah, there is certainly this thing right now of like the impressions that the movie bombed, and that it's like not they get whatever it's like, but it's like breaking like streaming records, and apparently more people are watching The Sopranos than have ever done before. So the terms of you were talking, Ariel, about like if you wanted to watch this movie, whether you liked it or not, it might be intriguing to you to go back and watch The Sopranos or dive into it for the first time. I know a lot of people were doing that, so certainly I think HBO Max would still see this as a success. But yeah, it is a little bit weird that it's doing so well in streaming, and then they're gonna say, okay, but only for a month, and then we're gonna take it away. Yeah,
it's the Wild West. They're still trying to figure that stuff out. I mean, the deal was for that HBO Max stuff in the 30-day window. It was for every movie coming out in this calendar year. So we'll have to see what happens next year, how they renegotiate that, and what happens.
All right, interesting. I think that's our like spoiler-free. So I mean, would you, Rob, Nicole, would you say is it worth seeing? Skip it? Should people skip it entirely, or should they go see it?
I think you should go see it. If you like Sopranos, go see it.
Yeah, I feel like that as somebody who like hasn't gone back and rewatched The Sopranos, like I think it was fun to visit, you know, with these characters.
Sure.
And so I didn't hate it as much as Nicole did.
Yeah, I think I can hate it.
All right, let's dive in. Ariel, what was your final take? Should people see it?
I saw it in theaters. I'm of the mind that like, even if I'm going to see something as horrible as like Reminiscence or whatever.
Oh, Reminiscence is bad.
Oof. Don't see it. That's my official take.
If you ever need movie, like you need to know whether you should see it. Ariel sees everything. Rob, so you can.
Okay.
I mean, listen, I
live in New York, so it's like a major market. I'm very lucky. I have a lot of options, but I like to see movies in general on the big screen, even if I think it might be bad, because I'm like, at least if it's bad, it'll be big and bad. You know, like it's going to be like marginally better on the big screen than it would be on my phone or on my computer or even on my TV. I think see it. I think I liked this movie way more than I thought I would. And we'll get into why.
Mm.
All right. Okay, so it seems generally we think people should see it. So we're going to jump into spoilers now. So we're going to get into super spoiler categories. So you have this much time to turn off the podcast and go see The Many Saints of Newark. All right, let's jump into it. So, I mean, should we start with Nicole, you didn't like it. You said you hated it. What were your big problems with this movie?
Oh my God, there were so many.
So many.
How much time do you have, Grace?
Yeah, I mean, I can do this for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Number one, you have Michael Gandolfini.
Yes.
Michael Gandolfini, who looks exactly like his father.
It's incredible.
And who does an amazing job of portraying our beloved Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Why did we not utilize this man more? Like the story is Tony Soprano. No one gives a crap about Dickie Moltisanti.
Yeah. I, why did we go all in on Dickie Moltisanti?
I don't know.
Whoever's watching this for the first time, right, is watching The Sopranos, and they're like, oh, I love this movie. It's so good. And they go and watch The Sopranos, and Dickie Moltisanti is like mentioned 3 times in the whole series. Like he's not significant.
I got pretty annoyed when I realized this is not like the Tony Soprano like prequel story. This is not the coming of age.
We were lied to.
And I got so mad. Somebody said, "Well, the poster does say a Soprano story." I was like, "Yeah, Tony Soprano."
And it's
like,
who
story.
Made Tony Soprano?
talking about the poster, right? I guess to that point, who made Tony Soprano?
Who's Soprano?
We focused on the who.
Which then goes into the next thing, like who made Tony Soprano, Tony Soprano? And it's kind of Livia, who is like the second best character in this movie.
Agreed. Yes.
Yeah. Vera Farmiga does
an amazing job.
As mm-hmm. usual, but
and is underutilized in this story.
I mean, the women in this, I mean, yeah, the Sopranos could, you know, use a little bit, could give a little bit of love to sometimes the women in the in this movie. Yeah, I mean, Dickie Maltisanti is I mean, even the choice of having Christopher narrate the movie, like the first line is like, again, it's like it sets you up that you think this is going to be a movie about Tony Soprano, like how he sort of, you know, becomes the way he is. And I think it sounds like David Chase is like, has left room, potentially is interested in doing like a Tony Soprano in his 20s movie. So it sounds like that could still be coming down the line. But I certainly felt, you know, the opening line of this movie or the narration is like, that's the guy who strangled me. And then
that's not significant.
It's not insignificant to the whole movie. We never learn. We never get anything about
movie.
Tony Soprano and like how he became
freaking liars
the way he is. Yeah, it's just mm-hmm. about Dickie. So yeah, it's a big problem I have.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, that Christopher is not at all about like you know, I never really got to know my dad. Yeah, that's what just, he was really like.
It was all Tony.
Yeah,
that's true. That's actually like a tragedy. Like now that, like putting it in those terms, they could have done both, right? He could have kind of talked about both things, and the movie opened up more into like, oh, I didn't know my father, you know, and kind of parallel the Gandolfini real life story. But yeah, that was definitely a missed opportunity.
And now Tony is sort of in the show. He's a father figure to Christopher. Like you definitely could, like, you know, you could still do the Dickie Maltisanti story. I just think we wanted more Tony Soprano.
And if they're going to go down the, he was the mentor to Tony Soprano, then show me how he mentored him. Right. That wasn't there.
Well, he gave him some speakers.
Oh, that did it. Yep. Yeah. That put him in the mafia. Prick his finger right there.
It's what set him over the edge.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, and then I think my other big critique of this movie, I think that's certainly the main one. And then the other one is the Harold story. Leslie Odom Jr., he's really great in this movie, but I just feel like they're sort of trying to address that the Sopranos didn't always do a great job talking about race. And they're like, okay, we'll do it in the movie. And then they don't really know how to do it. So they have this idea of like setting it to the backdrop is the riots in Newark in 67. And they have this idea for Harold as a character who's sort of like up against Dickie, but it goes absolutely nowhere.
A different movie.
It's a totally different movie. And it's like this weird subplot that doesn't know what it's trying to say or do.
It doesn't make real sense in the story. It's a good story for a different movie.
Sure.
But yeah, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
Although Leslie Odom Jr. was really fantastic.
I mean, I thought all the acting in this movie was like...
I disagree.
Well, yeah. who was not good? Who was not acting well?
Well, at first I thought the actor who plays Dickie, Alessandro...
Nivola.
Yeah. I thought that he wasn't great on selling it. But then I heard an interview with him, and every other word out of his mouth was like... So he did a lot of acting in this movie. Like it was like he does not sound anything like Dickie Maltisanti. He's the total right. opposite. Yeah, right. He's like, and like we did this and like and I was like, who is this guy? Yeah. but
you weren't impressed by his performance. I don't
and you know what? I also didn't think that his O's were really believable. Like you really have to when you're
true.
Like you have to lift your hand up when you say it. And I did not see the hand lift.
Right. I think the two of you for sure. The two of you for sure would be.
Oh, and you lift your yeah. hand.
Even that was
he
better.
Didn't lift his hand.
The two of you obviously would be more of the experts on the O's. But I rewatched it again today as I was doing other things. And the one he does one to Tony, like on the bed when Tony like a comic.
He did
book.
Not lift his hand and it was not believable.
And, not only did he not lift his hand, he like it was almost like a Frankenbite. It was like he was down here and then like
it did.
The O came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. There was no like buildup.
It wasn't was good.
Like, I was like, yikes. Mm-hmm. And I was actually excited for him because like Alessandro Nivola, super handsome guy. He was great in Junebug, which came out so long ago. And I remember when I saw that movie, I was like, wow, this guy, he's gonna be a star, and then nothing. Like he's been in very few things.
Everyone's that now that he's gonna win an Academy Award for this. I was like, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Stop it.
Rob, what did you think of his performance? I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah, I didn't think Dickie Moltisanti was, was bad. I thought the actor actually did a good job. Like, I definitely had, curious decisions about, or questions about the decision to make him the focal point of the movie.
Right.
Go all in on Dickie Moltisanti. And, I had no issues with his acting. I had more issues with him as, the focus of the movie and just sort of a lot of the decisions they made for that character.
His character was so cliche too. It's like, oh, mobster, there's his girlfriend and he fights with his wife. Like, it was just, it was really cliche.
Yeah, that, I agree.
That and old story of killing your dad and stealing his girlfriend.
Aside from that,
and then killing her too.
Well, I mean,
That was one of my biggest annoyances with the movie was that, they're as close as ever. And she's like, I have to tell you something. I had an affair.
She left his enemy.
Yeah, but it was just a nice, happy scene. And she's like, but I have to tell you something. We're married now. I slept with this guy. And then he just strangles her and throws her in the ocean.
He has a problem with aggression.
That was that's the one thing Nicole's like, no, that was believable. That was believable that he did that. Because you could never, you're not supposed to do that.
That's
the one thing.
Mm-hmm. I would never say that it is her fault, but
right.
I do think that
that was a bad call.
I do think she is at fault for the context, for the place that she told him. You needed to tell him in a supermarket, in a police station, somewhere where you could have mm-hmm. been safe. You know this man already. Not that she would have thought he's going to kill me, but she probably thought, oh, he might hit me, something that for them was normal. And I was oh no, what is happening? Oh no, there she goes. And she's gone.
And she's floating.
And she's mm-hmm. floating.
Yeah.
This movie, I feel like he also, I didn't think his performance was bad, but I don't think they give him enough depth to make him super interesting. So,
the blind baseball team was interesting?
Let's stop down.
Can we talk about the most important part of the movie?
Was it a dream scene? Because there's also, I saw some theories online. The blind man, there's also theories that Sal, the twin brother, is also a figment of his imagination. And that maybe Dickie has some stuff,
But I read a bunch of interviews and it doesn't seem that's what they were going
in the Sopranos story.
But it's the scene where he daydreams or something and then he's gone.
No, I know what you're talking about. It's I don't know if it's a cutaway and then he's gone. It's did he dream this whole thing?
But they going to let him into the, if he's not visiting anybody, it'd be weird to let him. Yeah, you can hang out.
But
maybe he was really injured.
Yeah, I read interviews that Alan Sepinwall had done and talking with talking with David Chase and there was no part of it that was they were asking Ray Liotta to play Sally that was something that we were going to hire another actor
and too much money.
They didn't talk at all about how it was all a figment of Dickie's imagination.
I don't think it is. There were just some theories floating around that it was, but certainly the baseball Reddit scene.
And they were chanting, Dickie is the best. Dickie's or whatever it was.
That part
was over the top.
Yeah, that part felt, I think that piece of it specifically felt a little bit like his imagination. I mean, they had the good sense to slam cut away from the music, the chorus that was underneath that shot and how ridiculous that was.
Why a blind baseball team though? Do they explain that?
Because you got to make it super extra. There are so few things that he does that are
David
good.
David Chase said so.
The movie is the many saints of Newark. He is actually a saint.
He's one of the saints for sure. And then I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this correctly, that in the script, one of the parents says to him, one of the kids of the parents who he's coaching was like, you're a saint. I was like, we didn't need
it
that.
Does say that it does he literally do. Does
and
say
it's
that
so over the top and ridiculous.
Yes, but the translation of Moltisanti is the many saints.
Yeah, but no one's gonna say to this gangster that he, everybody
it's
knows
right there
he's
in the
gangster.
Title that it was gonna be the Moltisanti story.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Saint story.
Yeah I think
buying it. That's crap. The story's crap.
Yeah, I just the the murdering his father scene really does come out of, and I forget that this is part of The Sopranos, right? Is that it's like, you know, you are seeing these people, and there is some rootable, though. But they are terrible people who commit atrocious acts of violence. That one is so interesting because it's like, again, he's upset at his father because of the way he treat. I didn't realize at the time that he actually was in love with the new wife, but he's also saying that it's like, you know, the way that his dad treated his mom growing up. But that scene just is wild.
Did you notice the bird in the garage? And when Christopher has his making ceremony, there is a bird in the making ceremony that is like significant, and it's a prediction of death.
Wow. Yeah, they talk about that in the movie, right?
Yeah, I think it's important
like that it was.
Yeah, they didn't need to hang a hat on it. Like, it would have been cooler if they didn't. Yeah.
Speaking of hats, Tony's mom has a funny line. She keeps saying throughout the movie, "Oh, you're talking through your hat." Like, that's
my
like
my grandmother
a saying,
used to say that,
which is so funny to me. Okay, I'm glad to hear that.
And
it's
she
authentic.
Used to say, "Can I curse on this for a second?"
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Go shit in your hat.
And it's always funny to me because the character is never wearing a hat. Obviously, that's not
what,
the medicine.
What does that phrase mean? What does it mean? You're talking to your
like
hat.
You're talking out of your ass. Like,
yeah, you're nonsense.
It's nonsense. But to the point about the bird, they at Dickie's dad's funeral, Tony and Janice are talking about it with their mom, and she's like. And they tell him how you saw the bird in the garage. She's like, "Oh, you're talking out of your hat." She's like, "A bird wouldn't go to a garage. A home is a different story." Like, it was such a funny scene. It was such a funny line that she made that distinction. Like,
but then
Livia
is
the best.
If they asked David Chase, would then he just say like, "The bird
that means
nothing."
That means nothing.
There, there was
a bird.
And then I think, you know, maybe it's too like on the nose, but like you do have Tony like walk up in this moment, like he comes over, right? And he's like, "Can I help with the car?" Whatever. Doesn't feel like that's the moment where like, yeah, you get a little bit of like, oh, he sees the truth, you know, he sees what's happening. But Dickie's just like, "You should go home," and then that's it. That's the scene. He just tells him to leave. It's very strange.
He hurts.
Tony's just
him.
Always lurking around.
He hurts him. So like, I do think that's one of the things. So there are like a handful, maybe like three or four things that like made me really like this movie. And in the sense of like, I enjoyed the experience of watching it while there are clear like missteps and things that they kind of messed up. But like one of the things that for me, they got right emotionally and like rang true was the tragedy of so much of this. And like the way like families repeat trauma and like things get passed down and like things that you would never know, like we realize it as viewers, but they obviously can't see it in their context because they only know their life. So I thought it was really interesting that like he in that scene, like he's hurting Tony. It was like an example of like, I can only get you out of here by telling you to leave, by hurting you, not by like trying to act like trying to like treat you like an adult basically.
When you yell at a dog to
or
leave.
You can say, "Listen, Tony, I don't want this life for you. Why don't you, you know, go to college? This
that
life
would
isn't
have,
for you."
That would have required a level of emotional maturity that he clearly didn't have.
And I think that echoes into The Sopranos, where Tony Soprano really, like, he is not grooming AJ Soprano to
for
be
sure.
part of.
He wants
like,
the opposite for him.
Yeah, whereas, like, you could tell from this movie that, like, you know, people were like that might have been ultimately what Dickie wanted to do, but nobody's like really trying to like give him the guidance he needs to not be a part of that life.
Yeah
you tell a teenager don't do this. If you don't give them an alternative, they're just gonna do it.
What did we all think of the like the family crew, like the casting of the young
Can
versions
I say that,
of everyone.
That, yeah, I one of my biggest annoyances with the movie is like, how old is Silvio supposed to be when the Sopranos TV show starts? Like, give me like the day. So, how old is Silvio in 1971? Is he 30? Is he 30 in 1971?
21. I mean, Steven Zahn is born in 1950. So, if you just take his age.
Well, in The Sopranos,
he's 21
in Soprano is in the beginning, he's 35.
Right.
So what would that make Silvio? Was he 20 years older than Tony?
I don't know. Like I got the sense that all the way through the show. Like, yeah, they're sort of like contemporaries. You know, but Silvio like must be so old.
You underestimated really like, is you underestimated his skincare routine.
End of The Sopranos.
I mean,
he's not 70 at the end of Sopranos.
He looks great
now.
Okay, well, I mean, how old is he?
No, I agree with what you're saying. Like, it doesn't make sense. But he's like under that logic, him being 70, that doesn't make sense.
I think it's also like the hair they give him makes it look, you know, it looks like he's older than maybe he.
I mean,
they do talk
all those guys like Big Pussy and like Paul, like those guys like must be like super old. Like I never thought like Big Pussy was like 15 years older than Tony.
Yeah, they do all seem like they're supposed to be like around the same age, but then they're all already in this movie. They're already all hanging out with Dickie.
Pussy and Tony were supposed to be really great friends, and you know, he can't be 15 years older.
I mean, he's not 15 years older, but he's like, you know, well older than me.
But like, also, where's that in the movie? Like, where's that? Really? I mean, I guess he's not in like the thing yet. But couldn't he have not been in the it's so hard to say. I've talked about James Bond. I've had to say Pussy Clarence. I feel like I totally blanked out that there was a character named Pussy.
You tried to forget.
Couldn't he have not been like in the crew? Like, couldn't that have been a certain? Like, I don't know. Anyway, it's just like they give again. It just goes back. They give Tony nothing in this movie. Just lingering in the background the whole time until he chucks a speaker out the window. Yeah.
And Silvio was just a bad impression of Silvio.
It was a pretty bad
it really was
Silvio.
Though I think that would like and Polly won't like it felt a little bit like cartoonish, like a caricature, like somewhere I saw someone call it like an SNL skit almost.
It totally was. I
was like, yeah, that's kind of accurate.
Polly Walnuts was a little bit more believable than Silvio, but that was just terrible.
Yeah, and I guess to his credit, I did not realize until the credits rolled that it was Billy Magnuson. I was like, oh my God. And then seeing it a second time, I saw he was wearing like the Vera Farmiga nose, basically. Like, that's why I didn't recognize him. They probably shared the same nose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Pussy was really good too. He hit all of Pussy's nuances, like his facial expressions and the way that he talks. Like, he really nailed it.
Yeah.
Some of them did their homework.
Mm-hmm. Not Silvio.
Yeah, I think it's just Silvio. We haven't
did not understand the assignment.
What do you think of Young Jr.?
Corey Stahl.
Did love him.
I thought he was great. I thought
he did
really
a really
good
job with Jr.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Corey Stahl, I really believed. Like, I really believed a couple of things. One, that this person became the person that we saw later on. Like that part, it made sense.
It made
sense. And then the every time, like, it was like, you know, like death by a thousand paper cuts, like every time somebody insulted him, said something negative, made fun of him, like to his face, I was like, ugh. And he played it so well. Like, it came out, I mean, it came back at the end of the movie in a way that we could talk about later, whether or not it was fully earned. But I was feeling it throughout. I was like, oh man, like he's doing a really good job at like being aggrieved with all these like horrible microaggressions.
I feel like it's a more believable story of who made Junior Soprano than who made Tony Soprano in this movie.
They did say a Soprano story.
They weren't that specific.
Yeah, it is true. By the end, it is Junior who takes up the hit on Dickie. So it almost is more of a Junior story than anything Tony gets. Yeah.
And didn't they, Nicole, like in the show, you're presented with different versions of why he died or how he died? Is that correct?
Yeah, there's two different kind of, first they blamed it on it was like the black gangsters. Mm-hmm. That was the first story. And then it was the crooked cop. So it was something like something meshed together. I don't know. Christopher then whacks the crooked cop because Tony gets, you know, his contact and finds out that he's like in town.
Yeah, Tony like gives it like to Christopher as a present. Like, here's the, you know, the idea of the crooked cop that, you know, that killed your father. And the guy doesn't admit that he did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
yeah,
is that?
Yeah.
Potentially something that he took, like Junior took to his grave, right? Like, that's what we're supposed to think. Like, that never came out. And that's a surprise to everyone, even who knows the show really well.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. That was interesting to us.
Yeah. That's Junior at the end. Yeah. Was there anything you liked about Rob? You seem to like the movie more, maybe not like the movie, but liked it more than Nicole's. Anything else that you liked?
Well, it was just, I thought it was fun to, you know, spend time with these characters and in these locations that, you know, I haven't like really spent a lot of time thinking about since the end of The Sopranos. I didn't come in with sort of like the expectations that Nicole did. So, you know, I liked the, you know, a lot of like the little like character moments that we got in terms of visiting with them and, you know, getting to see some of the like backstory behind it. But, you know, overall, like I haven't gone back and watched it a second time.
Yeah, me neither.
Mm-hmm.
I have not either. It wasn't even streaming in Canada. I had to go to a movie theater to go watch it. But what about you, Nicole? Is there like a bright spot from this? Would you be a sequel? Are you excited about the process of a sequel?
Oh, God.
Well, I think that they had a really big missed opportunity after Dickie died. I feel like there was more to this movie. Like that was just not where the movie should have ended.
I agree. The ending felt very abrupt for this movie, which is the joke I was making about the end of Sopranos. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. Brian.
I guess it's this,
like every. I think that the Harold story never really gets resolved. Dickie is just dead, and then you get nothing about Tony really after Dickie.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I think they pinky promise at the end from the coffin. Yeah. Which really made no sense.
Well, the problem is also I think that, you know, David Chase like is, you know, probably like doesn't want any feedback from anybody. Like David Chase had a lot of rules about this movie where he did not want the movie to be over 2 hours for whatever reason.
Yeah.
He was adamant that the movie could not be 2 hours. And we watched the night after we had watched the movie, we watched there's like a 17 minute like HBO like first look about it. And I don't know if it's David Chase or one of the other writers talking about like this is a movie that like you know, like a typical Hollywood script has like a structure. Like, this doesn't have that. And it's like, yeah, we can tell.
Yeah.
Part of the problem, idiot.
Yeah.
Like, there is no antagonist. Or there is no protagonist more.
I mean, you know? You could make the argument kind of in
well,
both.
Well, I really feel like that, like, I feel like that they start to, when they introduce, like, Harold and, you know, like, okay, there is like the, you know, the black, I don't know if mafia is the right word to describe, like,
yeah, they start their own group, their own,
yeah, they just start their own group and do their numbers and like like step up to the Sopranos. Like, I feel like in another movie, like, okay, well, like, oh, this is going to be the story of like these protagonists like are gonna like take back this thing from the Sopranos.
Dickie.
Or the movie could have gone like okay, this is the antagonist, like this, they were just kind of there, like it was just like another thing that happened.
You were filming a different movie.
In the movie, yeah,
they were like, you could see the movie where it's sort of like Dickie almost has to bring in, you know, Tony because he's dealing with this like threat of Harold and his, you know, but there's none of that. It's just sort of like they splinter off, they, you know, and then it just goes nowhere. It never really sort of get a little bit of back and forth, and then there's no resolution to that plus, well, which maybe, you know, they're saving it for the sequel, the Tony sequel, but like certainly from this movie, this, you know, this movie as a whole, it doesn't work.
And I feel like they had something where I think that this was, and I think that probably it results in like why they ended up like splitting time between 1967 and 1971 was because you had these, you know, 1967 riots, which of course, you know, it's like, you know, 20, like it wasn't 20, just 2020. Like this is like, this kind of stuff has been happening all through, you know, modern American history. And like, let's see like how this impacted these characters from The Sopranos, where this big incident in Newark took place, where like, how did the characters from The Sopranos get affected by this? But then I just don't think they knew what to do with that.
I agree. I don't know if David Chase is the person to tell like that story. There was interesting Watchmen, another HBO show, I think did a really great job with like taking that universe and then letting other people sort of tell that story. And I do think there is like an interesting story there. I just don't know that it's David Chase who is going to helm that story. Cause I get what they're going for. And I just think that like they wanted to sort of touch on it, but didn't exactly know
it feels extremely shoehorned in a way that like feels
It's like inauthentic. Like
inappropriate. Yes, inauthentic certainly, and borderline just like inappropriate. Like if you're gonna do, like it's almost disrespectful to treat to be so cavalier about it and not. And just from a story perspective, like to have it not fit as well is just kind of a missed opportunity. Like we've all kind of said in a way. And even like the ending would have hit so much harder that he gets like a post-credit scene essentially, if we had kind of like we like the character and we've gotten to know him kind of. But where he fits into this like broader universe.
Yeah, certainly. So that was our discussion about what we liked about the movie.
Wait, hold on.
I think I got there by asking what we liked. So if you have things you like.
Yes, I have two things that I want to say about like if we're gonna switch. One, we touched on it a little bit, but I think Michael Gandolfini, it's so beautiful. Like from the outside, for me being a casual fan of Sopranos, way before the movie came out, when they announced that they were casting Michael Gandolfini, I was like, wow, this is so fascinating. From like, obviously there's like the marketing piece of it and the, we need to make money. That part makes sense. But just like to be able to play the same character that your dad is famous for, that everyone knows him for.
It's a legendary character.
A legendary character, for sure. Like one of the most famous and forever known characters that will ever exist in the media. Mm-hmm. To get to play that character almost as like a love letter to your father. Like, I'm sorry if I can get sentimental for a second. It was so beautiful to me. Like there's a shot where when Tony's father comes back from jail and Tony's like awkwardly like coming over to say hello to him, the camera kind of pans from behind and it doesn't lose sight of Tony. We don't see Tony's father's face, we only see Tony approaching, and then without cutting he comes over, he kisses his dad on the cheek and he said, I missed you, dad. And like sorry, but my mind was immediately like, holy shit, that's so beautiful and sad, like that they kept this in and it feels like he's talking to his father, like his real life father.
Yeah.
And for the audience too, it like whenever he was on the screen, like it really was Tony Soprano, this character that we loved. James Gandolfini, like we loved that man. And now
I just got chills. Talking about it.
And then you have Michael, who, oh my God, looks so much like his father, delivers words like his father, has his father's mannerisms. Like he nailed a lot of it with, you know, the real Tony Soprano. And they totally underutilize that. And I, as a fan, I was really looking forward to Tony being back, to having James Gandolfini back, and to have that, you know, that father-son relationship brought together, where like James Gandolfini died when he was young. And it felt really good to be able to watch that, and they didn't deliver on it.
I also thought when they announced that they were going to do this movie, like I kind of thought that we were going to be seeing the story of Johnny Boy Soprano. Like I really
who
thought
was so insignificant.
Sam. Yeah, and he was barely in the movie. Like I really
John Bernthal.
We're going to see, like, because I mean the lore of Johnny Boy Soprano is much more in the Sopranos television show than Dickie Maltisanti.
Flashbacks. He's in I certainly thought we were gonna get that.
And so like there's a number of like dream sequences and flashbacks about Johnny Boy Soprano, who is really barely in the film. So I thought that was really a disappointment that we spent so much time in that era, and it seemed like that Johnny Boy Soprano was never even around.
I think that was another David Chase FU to us, where he's just like, you think that's important? F you, it's not. You're stupid.
It's like, well, Livia is so horrible that he doesn't want to be around.
Did he go to jail on purpose?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, the movie, like, you think that sort of the movie is like you're gonna set up that like Johnny is just in prison for a lot of, but he's not even really in prison for that long. So he's like around, and so they're trying to establish that like Dickie and Tony have this like father son type relationship, but like they don't I don't know, it's like you kind of have to flesh out why he doesn't have that with his father, and they don't really do a good job of like explaining that either. But yeah, I think the one thing I'll say for, like, you know, it being Michael Gandolfini in this movie is that's so much pressure to put on, you know, a kid to, like, take on the role of his father. And he really does a great job. And, you know, you talked about how it's not just that he looks like him. It's that he like sounds like him, and he's like inhabits like Tony Soprano so well, like, that I do think him. He does. He really does. And I do think that's, like, that's really exciting in terms of, like, you know, when you talk about, like, maybe this is, like, you thought this movie was going to be, you know, okay, we get Tony Soprano back. It seems like maybe David Chase has ideas that, like, that's the next one.
He did sign a development deal with HBO to potentially do more stuff.
So I think if they do move forward with, like, you know, more of this, like, prequel Tony Soprano, this is chapter one, and whether we thought they nailed it or not, you know, but hopefully, you know, I do have a little bit of faith that, like, yeah, okay, if they're going to slot Michael Gandolfini into this role of playing young Tony for, like, the next however many years, it could be really fun to watch.
I'd watch.
Nicole, yeah. What if Jon Favreau came in and took over the Sopranos franchise?
D-girl?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, he is in the Sopranos universe.
Yeah, he is.
No, I'm saying that he, like,
but just like the MCU, they'll just recast him. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
You had one other thing, Errol?
Yeah, I just so we talked. Nicole talked a little bit about, like, how things were cartoonish, and I thought, like, in the beginning, I thought, oh God, what's his name now? That played both twin fathers.
Ray Liotta.
Thank you. Ray Liotta. In the beginning, I was like, oh God, this is kind of awful. Like, he's playing this guy so over the top. And then when you see his brother sit down in prison, I was, like, blown away, because it couldn't have been more different. Physically, obviously, that's easy. You can do that with makeup and with prosthetics, but, like, the mannerisms, the way, like, this performance for me was, like, second of all, like, behind Michael Gandolfini. Like, this was my second favorite thing about the whole film. Like, to have someone who plays it so well and could be, like to me, it was a mirror, right? Like, Tony has his therapist, and for a very small amount of time, Dickie Moltisanti has his uncle as his therapist. Mm-hmm, and, like, just like a real therapist, he sees right through him. He knows exactly. He knows he knows that this man has killed his brother, and he knows that this man has now killed his wife, or, you know, his corresponding wife. And he tries to help him. He tries to help him. And he's like, it's the wanting. And, like, that stuff worked so well for me, of, like, he's Buddhist now. He only wants to listen to music. He's done with that life.
The reformed gangster.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that performance was kind of incredible.
It was very Sopranos-esque with, like you said, with the Melfi, and now with Uncle Sal or Sally.
Yeah, I thought there was good stuff. I thought it was shot really well. I thought the cinematography was really well done in this movie. I'm kind of a sucker for, like, the throwback, you know, the 60s stuff. So the cars and the streets. So I thought it was shot really well. And yeah, there's certainly moments in there that, like, feel Sopranos, which is why I do think, like, you know, if they're going to continue, you know, like you said, he's signed this agreement with HBO. Hopefully this is sort of a blip on the radar. This is, like, you know, as the lowest we can get.
David Jace is like, fine, I will make more stuff that I hate.
I heard him really on an interview, and he was in, I think it was Australia. And after he was done, everyone was like, wow, that guy's an asshole. And I'm sorry, can I say that?
Yeah.
And he went on a different podcast, and it was another podcast that was in Australia. And he goes, were you the guy that called me an asshole? And he's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Oh, and, like, he was really pissed that someone or people would think of him in such a way, when really he was.
He just doesn't see himself that way.
He seems so self-aware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But everybody else, like, they just kiss his butt. Mm-hmm. All of the actors. Oh, he's so
not
brilliant.
On this podcast.
This podcast.
Actually, Nicole, you said Australia. He's doing tours in Australia, and I was like, oh my God, is he doing the new Blood versus Water season? But no.
Vote him out.
Yeah.
He's gonna get himself voted out with that attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on The Many Saints of Newark? We were disappointed.
Disappointed, but
yeah, good soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah. Well, Sopranos is known for their music.
Mm-hmm.
No. Yeah, when they started playing that, like, Nicole, I think I agree that the pinky square thing at the end is silly. But when they started playing that opening music from Sopranos, like, maybe it was just because I was in a movie theater.
Yeah, yeah.
But I hadn't felt that cool in like 3 months.
But the significance of it, like when he first did the pinky promise, it was like, oh, you're going to be a good boy. You're going to do well in school. Like that's what the pinky promise was. And then the pinky promise at the end, it was like, well, what do you like? That doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't like tutor him. He didn't make him so weird. It's very strange.
Yeah. I bet David Chase didn't want to play the Sopranos music. He's like, no, the fans will like it too much. No, no.
That was probably in the clause. Like one of the things the movie has to do is use that piece of Sopranos music at least somewhere.
He just never watched the end of the movie and they put
my
it in
my favorite song.
Yeah, it is really good. It's great. I agree. I thought it was fun.
Good theme song.
All right. That's our coverage. That's Many Saints of Newark. Rob, Nicole, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this was great. Rob, do you have anything going on?
No, talking a lot of Survivor with, everything going on with Survivor 41 over on RHAP.
That's great. Mm-hmm. That takes place. This is my first ever Survivor season in real time.
Yeah, I know.
I binged all 40 over quarantine.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That was a whole thing.
And also listen to all the podcasts.
He did.
Yes, I did. I started, I think it was like Caramon, but yeah, I did. It was hard. And there were so many that I couldn't. Like I had to do Know-It-Alls and I had to do Wiggle Room eventually, but like I had to skip so many of the other ones. There was only so much time I could wait between episodes.
Oh my God, I thought you were talking about the Survivor ranking podcast, but no, went back and listened to all the podcasts.
Well, while I was watching the show,
I would love to do a Sopranos rewatch.
Oh, well, see? Okay. We're talking about.
I just make that up in my head.
You made that up in your head.
No, Nicole.
No, that's fine.
Ariel is talking about he watched all of Survivor and then started listening to all of Rob's podcast.
Yeah.
It was a crazy
thing.
No, it's okay.
I mean, we're on the network for a Sopranos rewatch podcast.
Yeah,
Nicole.
True. It's my fault. You're doing it right. I'm doing it wrong.
So, Grace, has there ever been a Sopranos brand steal?
I don't think so.
Nicole, who would win Sopranos Survivor?
Sandra.
Is it with the Sopranos characters?
Yeah.
Well, it's not the Sopranos with Survivor characters.
I got confused. I get confused easily. Yeah.
This tough.
I would say Tony.
I would say Tony.
Do you think Janice would do well?
Ooh, Carmella.
Carmella's up there. I mean, they're all gangsters, even Carmella.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a podcast waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Nicole and Rob do.
Yeah.
What would Sopranos brand steal? Blood versus water is a little
it's too obvious.
People related.
Heroes versus healers.
Well, brains versus beauty versus
that
brawn.
Would be fun.
Villains versus villains, maybe.
Mm.
Actually, there's not that many people related on the show.
Champs versus contenders.
Yeah.
Right. More like Australian style.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, could happen in the future.
It could happen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nicole, where are you up to these days? I know you all are still doing the 5 for 5.
Yeah, podcast. Just trying to keep sane. These kids drive me crazy.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch any of the part of the movie where a parent said something to a child or backed a certain way to a child and you were like, same.
During Sopranos?
Yeah, during the movie or during the show.
Yeah, maybe a few times.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, but that's it. Just 5 for 5s. You should listen to them. They're fun.
They are great.
They are fun.
The Rob has a podcast Patreon feed. Ariel, what are you up to?
Oh, man. Had these wonderful podcasts that I'm doing with you. We'll be covering, I think I mentioned this at the beginning, we're starting to cover certain movies if they're big enough separately. So we'll be doing that going forward. We have a long fall winter ahead of us in the best way. Yeah. A lot of big, huge franchise movies coming out that we'll be covering. I am on the Post Show Recaps patron feed, Post Show Recaps Theater Live with Jess Sterling and Josh Wigler. I always get their names confused. That's why I said it so slowly.
Yeah,
and we watch movies on the Discord, sometimes on Twitch, have patrons on to talk about the movies. It's super fun. You should come and join. What about you, Grace?
Succession season 3. Rob, are you caught up? Nicole, are you caught up on Succession?
We're probably watch another episode tonight. We're almost at the end of season 1.
It does. It
we're,
is good.
We're getting down to we're hoping to get close by the start of season three.
It had a slow start.
It does start a little slow. I feel like halfway through season one is really where it starts to pick up. There's a specific episode I have in mind, but yeah, covering season three with Josh Wiggler and Jess Sterling. On
See, it's so easy for you to say the name.
Post show recaps. We did two preview podcasts. One where we sort of talked about, what we liked about the show, sort of season one and season two preview. And then we didn't use Brant Steele. We didn't use the simulator,
old school.
But we did. Yeah, we old school style would see who was the successor to Waystar Royko. So that just dropped. On the Patreon feed, I'm also talking about James Bond. Ariel's going to join Jessica Lisa and I to talk about No Time to Die. That should we'll probably record next week sometime. If you're interested in a three-hour movie, go check out No Time to Die. It's so long.
I heard it was really good.
You heard it was good? I saw it was a soft opening.
It was. I feel like the movie. It's hard to predict the movie theater crowd right now. I don't know. At least in Canada, it's still pretty slow. Like, you go to like a 9 o'clock showing, and there's like four people in the theater. So
I think people are still.
I know. I love it.
I love a good matinee. You'll catch me at the 9 a.m. showings. I don't care.
Mm-hmm. So doing that. Lots of other stuff. Follow me at High From Grace to see what else I'm up to. But I think with that, we'll bid you adieu. Bye.
Bye.